My name is Amy Esdorn, and I'm here at the Society of Petroleum Engineers Annual Technical Conference and Exhibition at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston, Texas. Today is September 30th, 2015, and I'm speaking with David Anthony. David, thank you for participating in this interview.
Thank you, Amy.
Well, let's begin. My first question for you is, how did you get involved in the industry?
I grew up in Malaysia and Southeast Asia, and my parents educated all of us in Australia, as it turned out. So the particular course I went to had a one-year work experience component, and I wound up getting a job with BHP Billiton, whom I'm still working for today. And during the course of that year, when I started, I wound up getting an opportunity to join an industry I didn't know very much about, but I learned a lot that year. And when I wound up graduating, I went back to work for them. So that's really how it started. And the job itself has really evolved in many different ways. I've had an opportunity to travel and work all over the world. And again, I didn't really plan on any of that as a new graduate coming out of university. But the opportunities have been amazing, really, when I think back over the course of my career.
And what was your first job?
I actually helped install the very first IBM PCs that the company had, because these had just come out into the market in 1985, if you can imagine, as a student. And then in 87, when I went back to work, I joined as a graduate analyst programmer. And so I was still in the end user computing team, and I was like the resident PC expert, but the technology was very nascent back in those days. We used to have PCs on trolleys, and we would wheel them around, and an entire department would share a PC. It was pretty amazing. And then I started doing a bit of programming, database programming, and I got into software, and particularly software supporting production and production allocation and also reserves. And back then, we didn't have a lot of packaged software. A lot of this was custom development in-house, and it's just over time the software industry matured and companies started making product, and then we started buying product. So my first few years were really programming. And then from there I got transferred from, so I started my career in Melbourne in Australia, and I got transferred to Northern Australia to Darwin, where we had a floating production facility. Actually, we had three of them offshore, and we were also doing a lot of exploration in the area between Australia and Indonesia. So I got into IT operations at that point, and I supported the operation for almost 3 years. I moved back to Melbourne, and then I got into several large projects as we were rolling out big corporate systems, and they were data integration projects. So this was sort of in the mid-90s. And then subsequently from there, I moved to Europe, where I worked in major capital projects where we were building large oil and gas plants. And so I had an opportunity again to work and travel in different countries. And then 10 years ago, I moved to Houston as the company was expanding here in the U.S. And so I've been living in Houston ever since. And along the way, got married, had children. it's been quite a journey, really.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about... a little bit more about what it was like in 1985 when you started, as far as the computers and the software and all the rest of that.
So we had very much very simple equipment in the workplace at the time. We had terminals on most people had terminals on their desk. And so all the computing power was in a data center. We literally used to say it was all behind glass. We still were using pretty innovative technology for the time and for the day. But, for example, maps would be digitized, but the digitization would happen by hand. So somebody would stick a map on a board and then hold a pen and then dot the lines around the pen to convert that into points that would be stored in the computer to generate a map. Today, you know, you can buy the data, load it, and run it on your PC, or you can even, you know, with Google and products like that, just get it from the internet. But we were using computers to do very early processing. I think the main thing that's happened when I look back over the years is, first, we had the advent of computing becoming more and more pervasive, and computers, hardware really, becoming more powerful. And so that then helped us do a lot of task and process automation. So repetitive tasks started getting automated. And not just things like word processing, but the transactional systems that we use for processing bills, buying product and services from suppliers. All of those things became easier with computers. But then latterly what happened was software. And really, software has become more sophisticated. As you know, I'm saying how we used to write a lot of software ourselves. Companies started writing software. We started getting best practices across industry being built into software. So as the software platforms became more sophisticated, then we started to be able to do more and more things. And so we went from task automation towards really business process automation, towards more and more sophisticated forms of collaborating, solving problems, communicating, and so on. So I think that's what I've seen in the IT industry. I think the other big innovation's been telecommunications and really, again, with cell phones, mobile phones, networks, and then subsequently the internet in the mid-90s, which has today totally transformed how we connect with each other. And when I think back as I was growing up really through all of that, you never realize, because you don't sort of step back and look at it, but the rapid pace of change, and yet now when I look back, it's been constant through the sort of 28 years I've been working. It's just been a constant blur of change. The cycles of change have got shorter and shorter as well. So when I first started work, we would buy a piece of software and we would use it for 10 years, or another piece of software and use it for 5 years or 7 years. And what's happening now is we're going from longer cycles like that towards we'll put something in and use it for 2 years or 3 years, and then we're on to the next thing. And in some areas, it's almost a constant blur of change.
Absolutely. So you talk about developing software, and I was just wondering, did you collaborate with certain engineers to do that, or was that just for supporting the business aspect of it? Was it for supporting production? How does that, reservoir simulation?
In my early career, when I was doing software development, always working with the business. So we would, we had probably medium-sized teams. But we would sit down, very much like we do today, gather business requirements and solution very collaboratively. And, I've worked with drilling and completions. I've worked with production. I've worked with a lot of business systems teams as well over the years. So on products that we had in-house that would do finance, supply, HR, and those sorts of things. Even remember in the early days when we had a lot of libraries and those sorts of institutions, we had an exploration library and a journal. We had one of the big systems I worked on was for circulating journals. We would print off lists, stick them to the back of magazines, and put them in the internal mail. So, a lot of those things have gone now because everything's electronic.
Wow. Well, you're talking about the different projects that you worked on, but what was your favorite project that you worked on?
So, when I moved to Europe, I got an opportunity to work on several large capital projects that we had in the Algerian Sahara. We were building an oil plant near the Libyan border and a gas plant near the Tunisian border. And at the time, they were the third and fifth largest capital projects in the company. And I was based in London and would fly in and out as needed. We had several in my team, so on the IT side, working in country as well. And we did the engineering for one project in The Hague and the engineering for another in France, in Paris, in La Défense. And so at one point, we had an office in Algiers, we had a desert base in Hassi Messaoud, and we had engineering construction going on in the Sahara in two different locations. For one of the projects, we had to drill and complete 37 wells, and we're running seismic. So when you think back in its heyday, we sort of had 13 or 14 operational locations that my team and I were spotting, and we had the chance to work with people from all those different countries and different cultures. And it was very fulfilling, actually, starting from sort of scratch, building everything out and turning it on and then transitioning it into operations. And I really enjoyed I learned a lot, actually. When I think back, that was a huge learning experience. There was the cultural side of it because of, all the diversity. But even the chance to work in a major capital project environment in Europe on a several turnkey EPC contract projects, and to learn about how contracting's done, how the job's engineered, even the logistics of transporting equipment. We had two very large slug catches for the gas plant that we built, and they had to be transported by land from the port in northern Algeria. And at the time, I remember the whole journey took almost 3.5 weeks, and nothing that large had ever been transported by land into the middle of the country. So it caused quite a commotion in some of the small towns that the road trains went through. And I got the opportunity to work with some very clever people and very talented people, from not just our own organization, but the partner companies that we had, the national oil company, Sonatrach, that was involved, and also the engineering companies that we used. So it was a very formative time for me.
And when was that?
That was 1997, 98 through to sort of early 2003, just before I came here.
So you kind of spoke a little bit about some of the people that you worked with just now. Who've been your mentors in the industry?
When I first started work, I'll never forget, there's two or three people really. My very first boss, who really was bridging me out of academia, and even though I'd done work experience, but into life in the real world. And he always had lots of words of wisdom for us. But I think he really taught me about the thinking early career, and certainly would challenge me very as I started to sort of get out of the comfort zone and try different things. After I'd moved to Northern Australia, and then when I moved back after 3 years of working in operations, I had reported to the department head at the time, and he was a very good people manager, actually, and really, that's where I learned a lot about working at a different level of responsibility. He was very good at sort of giving us a problem and then getting out of the way and letting us go, but providing support at the same time. And when I think back to sort of early supervision, so that was when I made a change into managing out of individual contributorship. My boss at that time, and I worked for him probably 6 years, was very, that was another formative period. And when I moved to Houston, I reported to the CIO here for our company at the time, and she was in the role for 10 years. So I worked for her for 10 years. She was the longest boss, really. And she taught me a lot about leading. So I went from leading smaller teams to large teams and working at a different level altogether. And a lot about building teams and managing constructive conflict, engaging and managing change. And really how to build very strong teams. And also another piece is you become more senior in your roles, and particularly in the corporate environment, for us working in IT on the services side, how you engage with the business, how do you develop ideas and new thinking, how do you challenge conventional thinking, how do you partner. She was one of the most influential bosses I had. So.
Well, you sort of touched on this earlier, and in fact, you were talking about how things have changed over the years, but which technological innovations do you think have had the most impact on the industry in the last 60 years or so, and particularly from your point of view in the IT department?
What we do in oil and gas, we're often doing exploration and production in remote regions. So one of the things I learned very early on that geostationary satellites, and now we've got a lot more options in that area, but they help with telecommunications. And I was involved with some very early trials on stabilized communications on platforms in Australia. There's much more technology off the shelf now, but back then we were sort of almost inventing things. We had a satellite dish that had a pendulum on it. So when the platform moved, the idea was it would stabilize the dish, but the dish could sort of stay in one position even though the platform moved, and it was on a bevel and a mounting. Today you can buy automatic tracking satellites that are extremely sophisticated. We've got several in operation that on ships that are on a floating riser, and basically they spin around the riser and the platforms track. But satellite telecommunications has been a big thing for us in remote areas of operating. Computers generally, you know, talked about innovation in hardware followed by subsequent innovation in software, but and task automation to business process automation. And now this, the fact that one of the things you hear in our industry is the Internet of Things is what we talk about, everything having sensors and everything being connected. And so you're able to acquire data at an ever-increasing rate, but then you can use that data to drive decision-making. And so, again, it's the innovation in hardware allowing us to do the data acquisition, and then the innovation in software allowing us to do the analysis. And then, when I first started work at university, we were in the very early days of artificial intelligence and a lot of thinking around how that was going to flow, but we didn't have the computing power or the equipment to gather all the data that's needed. And today what's happened, though, is with the progression that we've had in that area, we're starting to talk again about neural networks, machine learning, pattern recognition, all those sorts of things. I recently was on holidays in Spain and Italy, and I hadn't used a translator program since the time I lived in Europe. So I downloaded the Google Translate software, and it actually has handwriting recognition, so you can read words on signs, and I tried even handwriting words in a foreign language on a whiteboard, and the software, using machine learning actually, will read what you've written, so it knows how to recognize what an A is, for example. And that's just, to me, phenomenal progression. So the consumerization of technology as well is giving us in the workplace more and more options. And one of the things we're constantly trying to do is figure out cross-industry, not just in oil and gas, but also from the consumer space, what can we bring in and adapt and use in our businesses. And so today we have more ideas and opportunities from that than ever. Mobility and you know, telecommunications, different ways of collaborating, all makes it far easier for us to be connected and share ideas. And I think those things are huge. You know, when I think back, you think back years ago when we had the paper memo that you would have an in-tray and an out-tray, and somebody would write you a note, and we even used to write to each other back formally. There'd be a reply. We'd use the photocopier. Today, you're doing all those things in seconds on your phone. You know?
So what innovation that you worked with that came out during your career, what kind of was the most exciting thing that you worked with when it first came out? Maybe you didn't know that it was going to be as exciting, but yeah, you know, it was just something that really made a big impact on your work.
I think, you know, is there any one thing? It's really, what I'm finding is really being able to combine things now, making a huge difference. But, yeah, I guess the internet, I didn't realize. I can remember the day we first turned the internet on. And I did not realize, I had a team of 16 people and we managed a lot of our infrastructure services, and one of the guys said to me, he said, can you come over to my desk? I just want to show you the Mosaic browser, which was the very first browser at the time. And this was 1992. And we were looking at it. It was all character-based. It was clunky. There was a thing called Usenet news groups. You got largely information pushed to you through email, or you had to hit these groups and pull information down. Search engines weren't really there. And, you know, eventually as they came out, they were very clunky, and it was largely text-based. So, yeah, I think we all looked at it and said, at the time, we could see the possibility, but probably not realize how it was going to evolve as much. And then over the course of a 2 or 3 year period, very quickly started to see a lot of changes that improved its usability. And I'd say by the mid 90s, 96, 97, it was clear it was going to be a big thing. but I'll never forget the first time the guys called me to down to have a look. And yeah.
So I just have a couple more questions for you. And the second to last one is, so you were talking about working in remote areas and satellite capabilities and everything. How has that technology evolved, and what has it meant as sort of like, how has it impacted the industry, both production-wise and from your standpoint?
I think the fact that today telecommunication networks are so ubiquitous has totally changed. You know, we had a concept in IT that you had to be connected to the computer. And then when you worked in remote locations and you didn't have a connection, you had to run everything locally. So we had to have the software on a laptop. Everybody had laptops and we would work. And for a long time, you know, the challenge, particularly for remote locations, was where you don't have connectivity, could you have everything in the cloud? Today we talk about cloud computing and not having any software on your machine, for example. And because telecommunications now are so ubiquitous, it's actually possible to work like that. And again, that is a major, to me, a major step forward. And now, not every country, there are lots of developing countries in the world that don't have all the telecommunication networks and so on that we have. But if you take what we say here in North America with the shale, where we're heavily involved in that area, we have private telecommunication networks that are like the phone networks, what we call LTE and 4G networks. And so they're high speed. We can push voice and video and data to anywhere in the U.S., even though the regular telecoms may be patchy. And we just had a project, one of the recent projects I've been working on that's really quite exciting is we in the Eagleford, we've been automating our well pads and putting in more advanced telecommunication networks so we can put cameras, we can get data back from the fields, from the field to the engineers in the office, and we've been building out surveillance centers with the aim of not having to have somebody visit the pads every day. So it started as a health and safety challenge, and how could we reduce the road miles and then the consequent exposure to, particularly the risks of being on the road all the time for the pumpers, the lease operators. And we've managed to cut driving miles by half. So, you know, the typical pumper was driving 4,000 miles a month, and we've got that down to 2,000 miles and less. And when you think about it, that's huge. It's cumulatively multiplied. So there's an example of technology being applied to shift the boundary on safety, as well as other things, you know, optimizing production, improving asset uptime, all the sorts of things that today we are trying to do, particularly in this current cost environment, low-cost environment with oil prices. And we started off with a safety mandate, but you can see the evolution of technology and the options that's given us today to make a huge difference.
That's great. So my last question for you is, how has being an SPE member affected your career?
I think there's lots of very good things about the organization. I mean, no single person has all the answers. And it's, you know, being a member provides so many different avenues to meet people who in turn actually have varying levels of experience, but give you this great network to tap into, as well as, you know, you look at the collective research, the papers that are published, the various working groups and technical committees, and the and things like this particular conference too. You know, you get an opportunity to really step outside of your day job and think differently. And members come from all over the world, so you know, there's always somebody out there that's either done this thing that you're trying to do before, solve the problem if solved before, or if they haven't, they're thinking about it, and you can find them and tap into them.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us today.
Thank you, Amy. I've enjoyed it.